we see what was up your sleeve? Did you use it or?
I don't know. What's up yours?
Jason Leisure is kicking Matt Eberflus's ass.
I don't know if I really look at it that way, Jay.
Jason Leisure.
I'm here in the studio at the Score. This is a very, very special honor for you.
You are right about miserable Jason Leisure. He joins us now.
I feel like Stu Gatz doesn't really like this segment.
I think you're great. I think you're miserable.
It might be the one thing that you and I have in common is that we both don't like this segment.
There's reporter for the Chicago Sun-Times.
You want to believe that they're telling you the truth and what they're saying is straightforward. But that, of course, isn't how it works here.
Jason Leisure.
You guys were high on and set on Caleb very early on. Did you also have Jaden Daniels marked down as this guy is clearly headed somewhere?
Yeah, no question. I mean, he is a talent, big talent. And as you can see that in the first part of the game, he's got a real good future ahead of him. You can certainly see how he reads the field, how he sees his vision, his anticipation, his accuracy, his ability to escape when he needs to, his ability to do the QB runs if they ask him to do that, athleticism. He's a big talent.
Jason Leisure with Spiegel and Holmes on 670 The Score.
We love when we get the opportunity to talk with Jason Leisure about your Chicago Bears. He joins us now here on The Score, the Spiegel and Holmes show. He's Matt Spiegel. I'm Lawrence Holmes. He's Jason Leisure, and he's back from London. How was London?
It was amazing. It was so good, man. The weather was incredible there, which I've never seen. Obviously, it's not London's reputation, especially this time of year. But there were some days last week on the bye week, Lawrence, where it was 70 and sunny.
It's lovely, man. I'm glad you got to hang and you and the family got to stay and do it right. And you come back to a Bears team in last place in a very, very good division. Before we talk Bears specifics, Jason, can you weigh in on what we've been swimming in for the last day and change here? Who's going to finish last in this division if you had to pick one from your perspective?
Oh, man. I'm going to pick the Vikings.
Why?
I'm just going to say that I'm not all in on the Vikings, even though they're off to an incredibly good start.
I think that that's fair.
It is fair.
When you look at Sam Darnold and you go, can he sustain this over the next 12 weeks? I'm not sure that's possible, but we'll see. Like, it's amazing that they've gotten this far with him, and I'm happy for him that he's having this type of renaissance.
Do you expect that the Bears can hang with these teams? We just watched them all on Sunday, and they all are pretty damn good.
Well, it's super interesting, and I went into the season. It's one of the funny things when you cover a team, whether it's the Bears, the Dolphins, whoever, and I'm sure the fans do this too. You go through the schedule before the season, maybe even all the way back in May, and you mark down win or loss for all these games, and you don't know how good the team you follow or the team you cover is going to be, but you also have no idea what those games are going to be by the time they roll around. Mm-hmm. I mean, there was a couple years ago where they were playing Houston late in the year, and I'm like, that's a loss, and by the time Houston stumbles into Soldier Field, the Bears demolished them like 36-7 or something like that, I think. You would not have had Washington as this enormous game for them going in, other than that it would be the two quarterbacks facing each other. And I would have had, Matt, in the NFC North, if you are a serious playoff team, if you are about business now, if you're the Bears, you better split with Green Bay, split with Detroit, and sweep the Vikings. Now the Vikings are definitely better than I thought. I still think that's still my pick if you're going to ask me who finishes fourth in that division. And it could be fourth and in the playoffs. That's not a shot at the Vikings. But they're definitely, decidedly better than I thought they'd be.
You know what's interesting is when I listened to the Bears last week and them talk about how this felt like a bowl game trip, that because of where they were and how they were secluded, that it had a vibe where they felt like, you know, not that this is a team that has a pretty good relationship with each other, but it seemed like they got something out of it. And we'll see if it matters, but I thought it was cool that they were talking about it in those terms.
Yeah, and it helps that you're playing Southeastern Tennessee State in that bowl game.
100%. That's kind of I was actually talking with a texter who was talking about the Bears defense, and I said, well, what happens when we see them play a better offensive team? And maybe we'll get that opportunity to see that on Sunday, depending on who's playing quarterback. But those are some of the things, those are some of the answers that I think are still out there for the Bears to grab.
Yeah, I believe in their defense. I think their defense, there's been steady growth throughout the last 3 years. And you saw a pretty good defense back half of last year. They have been very good every week this season, even when they've lost. Very good in Houston, for example, week two, even though they lost. And that's a good offense. That was a really good team. It's more the offense that I get that there's a lot of momentum and a lot of hope. But I've heard that. I've seen that. I mean, I grew up with the Bears. There's always been these little bursts of, oh, now they finally have it. Now, oh, man, we better worry. Some team's going to come poach Luke Getsy from us. And then it doesn't last. I got to see it. I got to see it before I'm bought in on that.
That's completely fair, Jason Leisure. I don't have to see it before I feel it. I'm feeling it in terms of Caleb Williams. And I think that's what's different. But look, they are not built from the lines out. They are not built from the offensive line out like the Lions are, like so many really good foundations are in the NFL. Once everybody is healthy, like Ryan Bates is back and Larry Borum has an opportunity, et cetera. I mean, how do you expect this Bears offensive line to line up left to right?
Yeah. Isn't that funny, by the way, though, Matt, that, you know, you have two offensive linemen running the team, and line of scrimmage on both sides is where they're still a work in progress.
Yeah, yeah,
you wouldn't have thought that.
And it's counter to what you thought they would have done. I have a theory as to why that is, but you know, we can get to it another time. I think I've gotten to it before, as a matter of fact.
I think that they have done a good job of matching up a long, long list of needs when they stepped in, Poles and Cunningham, and filling in those needs with the resources that matched up with them at different points along the way, whether that's trade assets, draft picks, free agent dollars, things like that. And it has just so happened that the things that they could fix at those times have really been a lot of the other spots. And you could say, hey, do you want to fix the defensive line? Okay, great. Well, okay, now you have Will Anderson from 2023, but you don't have Caleb Williams, so you don't have a quarterback. I mean, you'd have to unfix other problems to have those problems be fixed. But to answer your question, when they come back, I think it will still be Braxton Jones at left tackle, and he is definitely on watch the rest of the season. I think they're going to have Tevin Jenkins at left guard, assuming that he's healthy and good to go. And then from there, it gets interesting. I mean, does Ryan Bates get the shot at center? I think they're pretty happy right now with Coleman Shelton. And I know that they're happy with Matt Pryor, and you know that they like Darnell Wright. So that'd be probably my guess for the five. But, I mean, Ryan Bates is a guy that they have wanted in this lineup for 3 years. And I think he's ahead of Nate Davis. I think Nate Davis is...
I think Speeds is ahead of Nate Davis right now.
Yeah, I mean, he's definitely got at least Ryan Bates ahead of him before he sees action again.
By the way, my theory on the linemen is that Poles and Cunningham believe that they can scout and draft and develop, you know, lower talent level linemen into excellent players because they think that they could have done that.
They have, though.
Yeah,
they
know. Have. But they, as replacement level linemen themselves in their lives or worse, believe they could have been coached up and they think they can do it.
I agree. But they've got a good track record there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Braxton Jones was someone that no one knew about hardly. Right. A fifth round pick out of Southern Utah. Tevin Jenkins was overdrafted at a different position and then, you know, went to right tackle and then looked like maybe he wouldn't even have a roster spot. And they figured out a really good spot for him. They've been pretty good, but they haven't been good enough. That's the thing. Like, just because you can find someone that's better than what you've got doesn't mean you've got someone that you can take up there against Baltimore and Kansas City. All of this is competitive. You have to fix your own problems and fix them better than everybody else. And it's a big problem right now, if Washington's ahead of you in their rebuild, if their rebuild's better than yours, you've got that's one more hurdle. That's one more obstacle. Detroit was a joke how long ago?
Their rebuild is way
ahead of yours.
And they're right there is maybe the best team in the entire league right now.
But now Poles and Cunningham have a quarterback who can make the line look better than it is, which is probably part of their dream and design as well.
I'd still like it if the line was more competent so that they don't get the quarterback hurt.
Sure. Absolutely.
You know what I mean? Like that's what scares me is that could easily derail your bleep. Is that, sure, we always talk about Braxton Jones's draft status. I'm tired of it's not good enough that he's really good for where the Bears picked him. It needs to be, he's really good. Like that we should probably stop talking about it in those terms. Because you want him to be someone that you can depend on instead of just, well, we should pat ourselves on the back because we took this guy really late and he's competent.
Your performance over draft status does not block a bull rush.
Correct.
Yeah, these are all problems that they can address. Nobody wants to wait for it, including me. But these are all problems they can address with the resources they have coming up in 2025. I mean, when you have a first-round pick, That could be another pass rusher. That could be Darnell Wright goes to left tackle and you draft someone else, or goes to left tackle rather, and you draft a right tackle to line up opposite him. Mm-hmm. You have 2 second-round picks. Those could be interior offensive linemen. You have a bunch of salary cap space, and there are some good left tackles available as of now in that free agent class. I mean, there's a lot of things you could do. You just, man, you don't want a 4-year rebuild. You wanted that done now. And they're still kind of trying to find ways to make it work on the offensive line.
They are, and we'll see. The other part of that, and I thought it was interesting because Cole Kmet made mention of this a little bit yesterday. They're still not running the ball as well as they'd like. Why is that?
Well, that offensive line is part of the issue, but you know, they also have to get their running backs figured out. Shane Waldron has to figure this out. With you have enough talent there. DeAndre Swift, Roschon Johnson, Khalil Herbert, who just doesn't seem to be a factor in the game plan. I mean, there's weapons there if you can figure out how to put them, how to call the right plays for them and have them in there at the right times. All three of those guys can help you. They're really pretty stacked at running back. And they have an offensive line that was a pretty good run-blocking offensive line last year. This is really going to come down to Shane Waldron, I think.
Yeah, I think so. And we're hoping that the communication that went on and the evolution of the offense will have lasting powers in terms of continued communication and continued evolution. Like, I don't know if Shane Waldron has that next gear. Once the league adjusts to this and the league adjusts to that, we'll have to see. I do believe though that the communication's in a good place. What's your take on the fallout of how all that went as we move forward?
All of the player response, that's been the focus of this shift that you're talking about, Matt. But my mind is drawn to Eberflus's involvement, because Eberflus is someone who has, for 30-something years, been exclusively a defensive-minded coach. That is a new responsibility that he took on when they hired him as head coach. Now you are now you are the guy that answers for everything. Matt Nagy went through this. Now you are the guy that answers for missed field goals and the missed Eddie Pinheiro field goal at the end of the Chargers game a few years back. Now you're the guy that answers for that and everything else that happens in the building. Matt Eberflus is accountable and responsible for this offense, and that is a new responsibility that he's been trying to learn. And I believe him when he says after week 3 that he is going to where the problem is and getting involved in that offense. And I think he had as big of an effect as anything else in getting the play calling to something that makes a lot more sense to all of us.
Yeah, I'm glad to see the players acknowledge that. I'm so happy that they weren't like, hey, this is nobody's business but ours. I thought they handled this in such a mature way all the way around that it makes me feel like this is – I hate when coaches or players talk about having like a great team or they've got a great locker room, because in a lot of those cases, you don't, and you're still losing. I actually think this is an example of what a great locker room looks like. A problem was presented, it was taken to the proper people, and it was fixed with player input. That's the way that all of this stuff should work.
And the Bears would probably sit there and say right there justifies the money for Mercedes Lewis at 40. Mm-hmm. Right there is why it's worth having him as a captain who will kind of steer and oversee and make sure that this is done in a good way because he's been around it so much. The Bears have prioritized that. A lot of teams talk about prioritizing character. The Bears have done it. And I don't know if that's always the best route. I think that will cost you at times because it's really going to come down more so to talent. But if you go around that locker room, they don't have problematic guys. They really don't have anyone in there that is a problem at this point.
I think it's both.
They don't even have guys that are difficult with the media
well,
at this point.
That's interesting. Well, you know,
they don't.
It's both. It's character and talent, right? Because Detroit is all about character, too. Brad Holmes is all about, you know, Penei Sewell's my guy, and that sets the template in part because of character.
Got a little problem now, though, with Jameson Williams.
Oh, yeah, it's the second time because you had the gambling and now you got this.
Got a little problem.
Yeah, no, but it's true.
An example of what I would point to as character mattering on the field is you look at someone like Rome Odunze and the way he works like he's some undrafted free agent who's hoping to make the team, also happens to have top 10 draft pick talent. If you put those things together, you're getting a really, really good player. And I think they're at a point now where they have a bunch of guys like that. Montez Sweat is a guy who came up in Washington, and he has blasted that upbringing, I guess, as a pretty toxic environment. And we've all heard everything that's gone on in Washington during the last few years, and I would imagine that's a pretty tough place to start your career. And Montez Sweat is a guy who got to Chicago, got on board with the Bears' conditioning program, got on board with the way they practice, got on board with the way they want him to play, has taken these ideas as he's elevated to being one of the top pass rushers in the NFL over the last 2 years. He's now looking at these guys like TJ Watt and Myles Garrett and saying, okay, well, the next level is teams will throw everything at you and you beat it anyway, like Khalil Mack. How are these guys doing it? How are these guys that are where I want to be doing it? So then he watches those, but he doesn't just come in and demand, hey, Eric Washington, start doing this with me. I want to do the thing that they do with Myles Garrett where they move him around and he gets to pick which side he's on, things like that. No, he's like, these are some good ideas that I think would help, but I still have to play within the framework of what's best for the other three guys on the defensive line. That is great character. That doesn't mean it's not like, you know, Sunday school great character. It's great football character.
This segment with Jason Leisure is brought to you by Finishing Chicago. Great finishes start with contractors from finishingchicago.com. I saw that you ate well in London because that's a complaint from people over there.
Listen. There is great, great food in Britain as long as you don't order anything British.
Now that I can understand. It's a big time metropolis, a lot of different
cuisines
and nationalities. Great spot for Indian food, I was told. Great spot
I've
for
I've always heard
well,
I
well yeah because you know
well yeah because they it's, so it basically there. Yeah, yeah. But and so any place that the empire like took over and colonized and then brought people back,
I imagine you could probably find great Jamaican food there and great Nigerian food there.
How about American food?
No.
Did that to us.
1776. That's right.
None of that Boston crap.
Yeah.
The one thing I would never look for there, I think this is one of the last places in the world I would think to look for great Mexican food, would be England. And that was confirmed for me because I was just, one of my kids wanted to get something from, we went to a food hall, a really cool food hall, Mercado Mayfair, where they have all different stuff and really good stuff. And my 10-year-old daughter wanted to go to the Mexican restaurant that was there.
No.
And I was like, I really don't think this is the place for that.
Terrible idea.
Two things I probably would never try to find here would be Mexican and barbecue. I just don't really think that's got a big presence here. And she you know, went and ordered and ate the worst tacos of her life.
That's a great lesson.
Did she admit that they were the worst tacos she's ever had?
Yes.
Okay, good.
And you guys know Herb Howard, right?
Yes.
Yes.
Herb Howard, one of my
Very, very good friends. And we hung out a little bit while we were both over there. And Herb Howard and I are always hatching schemes. And we hatched this scheme to bring good Mexican food to London. And we at first were like, we'll make so much money off this. And then we realized they will not be ready for it. This will not do well. If you're used to boiled ham and potatoes, and we come in there with lime and cilantro and peppers and all kinds of stuff, it's not going to.
They want those crap ass tacos your daughter had, Jason.
Yeah, it's not going to happen.
They think that's fine. They don't know.
But they have awesome Italian food there, awesome Japanese food, awesome Chinese food. Always heard great Indian food. That's not one of my main things that I like, but I've always heard that it's very, very good there. Really excellent food. Just don't order anything British.
Guys, am I crazy, or is the idea of Jason Leisure and Herb Howard like bringing onion and cilantro over to London an excellent special idea for That's Montez?
Could be. Could be. It's a pretty nice collision of cultures.
How does Montez factor into this?
We don't know.
He eats at your restaurant.
Okay. We'll figure out something.
Right. He goes there, and Granny is somehow poisoned by your bad cilantro.
Also, I will try to find out for you guys this week what Montez did on the bye week.
Thank God.
Also, I'm pretty sure Herb Howard yelled at me crossing 63rd and Woodlawn yesterday.
Oh.
In a good way.
That's good.
Just saying what's up. He's a good man and thorough.
I can't call London a food city I want to target if the best cuisine is stuff from other countries. You know what I mean? It's like...
No, that's a little pot calling the kettle black there, Matt.
I agree.
I disagree.
Wholeheartedly.
I disagree. If we were to list out the 12 to 15 greatest cuisines in the world, British is not on the list.
No, but
I'm not making a food trip.
But American isn't even a thing.
But their access to it, and considering proximity to... France and Italy and Spain. I can understand how someone would go, London is a great food city.
I'm glad he had good food. I'm glad you had a good time.
We Jason. Are glad
had a
that you
had a great time.
That's great.
Oh, great time.
Well, that's good.
Awesome time.
Phenomenal. Thank you, as always, for joining us.
All right, guys. Have a good one.
Thank you, man.
That's Jason Leisure. He's terrific. I'm glad he had a good time. That when you step out on a limb like that, you do have to worry about, man, was this really a good idea? And that's a rough thing for a kid to learn, that I wasn't the smartest person in the room.
I learned a long time ago, when possible, find the indigenous cuisine. Like, what cultures are represented right there? For instance, you go to Arizona, that's where you have all the Mexican you can possibly have.
I would disagree with you on that.
Really?
I will tell you that you will find better Mexican food in Chicago than you will in Arizona.
Okay.
10 times out of 10.
Well, I bet that I'll tell you one thing that I wouldn't do in Arizona, which I'd been drawn to before, is get sushi. Get sushi in the desert. I'm sure you could find some decent sushi, but...
Yeah, I mean, I'm not a sushi guy, so I can't speak to it.
Hmm.
But you would be underwhelmed by... There's some great Mexican places Phoenix.
I've had great Mexican in Phoenix.
And then there's a real drop-off. And pretty much if you walked up and down 18th Street, you find something better here. Just saying.
Well, that's good. Well, there's a huge, very popular Mexican culture here. Thriving Mexican culture.
There are some good places. The Sonoran style of Mexican food is not for me. So, that's what it is.
All right, there it is.
That's what it is, man.
Okay, noted.
You want to talk NBA?
Well, yeah, I do, especially with Big Shot Bob.
Hell yeah. Robert Horry is going to join us to talk about the NBA starting up its season next on The Score.